hello and good evening. Welcome aboard on this beautiful Wednesday, 5 p.m. or thereabouts. Thank you for tuning in to 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. My name is Tom Ryan. With me is my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan.
I'm frazzled.
There she is. There she be. Frazzled or not, she's here. And we will do what we've been doing for years here in our time slot between 5 and 6 p.m. Basically, American Hit Radio is the program. And we've been talking about albums for a long stretch of time, starting with albums from the year 1955 and working our way through the time as it passes in chronological order. And we're up to the year 1977, pretty far into it, actually. And our lists convey two separate aspects of albums. We have a one list, which covers very popular albums, albums that made the top 40. And we have 500 of those on our list. And because the list consists of 1,000 albums, the other 500 consists of albums that did not make the top 40, which we call the alternative top 40 and the top 500 of the top 40. Put them all together, that's 1,000 albums, that's 1,000 weeks, that's 20 years of albums that we get to talk about, which is great for me because I think that I'm a really strong believer in the importance of record albums in the history of American music, in the history of music in general. But I'm mostly concerned in the music in the country that I grew up in. Of course, that would include music that comes from other countries because it has, they of course have their own influences on American culture. So it's all about basically trying to salvage albums on their own, and that's what this is about. And in a way, I can't say that we have any responsibility in terms of the fact that albums do seem to be having a little bit of a return to favor, but I'm happy to say that I am seeing that happen, that there are, but once again, not just vinyl, but the idea of albums as opposed to letting digital services pick your songs for you. Ugh, don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, it's like giving up your own sensibilities and your own ideas for what you think you might be interested in to a service that will feed you what they determine they think you're going to want. I hate that. I mean, would you go to a restaurant and just let the waiter say, you know what, I know what type of a person you are, and just have him bring you whatever he wants to bring you? You know, it's ridiculous. Music is not much different than that. So that's what this is about. And what we're talking about are 1,000 albums that I think would pique your curiosity or your interest to make you interested enough to follow what we're talking about and maybe pick up on a couple of albums. Some of them you're going to be incredibly familiar with. Others, maybe not so much. But today's album, I think you're going to be incredibly familiar with because it's one of the most popular albums of all time. It reached number 3 on the American Top 40 pop charts. Surprised it didn't reach number 1, but it sold immensely well, and it sold consistently for decades. It was originally released in September of 1977. Which makes this number 276, by the way, in our list of 500 for the top 500 of the top 40. So we're on the second half at this point. The album is by the band Steely Dan, and it's called Asia. Now, for the past few weeks, months maybe, I've often mentioned that 1977 was a pivotal and transitional year for rock and roll. And Steely Dan is certainly the band most responsible for the sudden shift in styles which took place, which is unusual because Asia, number one, is hardly a rock and roll album at all. And by 1977, Steely Dan was hardly a band. So to say that Steely Dan is the band that's responsible for the shift in styles, it's almost like a conundrum. But the thing is, from a production standpoint, Asia comes as close to perfection as anything I've ever heard from any genre. The attention to detail is so glaringly obvious that its sheen is the dominating factor. From here, there was just nowhere else to go. Asia hit a stop sign at the end of the road, and there was nothing to do but turn left or right. Those who turned right pursued a mechanical style of rock music that would soon be dubbed yacht rock, while those who turned left tried to tear the whole thing down and start again from the beginning, resulting to people breaking away from traditional rock and picking up on punk rock and new wave and all of that. So unless you are unbearably cynical, Asia is an album that I find to be impossible to hate. The title track exudes an exoticism that is thoroughly unique, with an arrangement that shifts styles in a self-consciously clever manner that defies categorization. It is jazz, easy listening, progressive rock and roll poetry, all tied up into an indefinably unique style all of its own. Songs like Black Cow and Peg could be labeled as pop songs, but for the production and the perfection of the recording, I mean, when discussing Asia, it's really hard to keep repeating the word perfection. Home at Last, which we'll get to when we get to side two, it's a lyrical masterpiece that boils Homer's Iliad down to a few stanzas, allegedly in the form of an R&B jazz-based pop song. So despite the gloss that coats every track, the song Deacon Blues is surely the most personal and moving song ever written by Becker and Fagen, the songwriting team, where the emotional honesty of the lyrics somehow breaks through the polish. In all, I think Asia is a miracle of sorts, which might explain why time has proven it to be impossible to replicate, even for Steely Dan, and also the end of an era. So when we get to the point where I say at this point, maybe that one type of rock and roll starts to die, that means I'm probably not going to be going in that direction too much more at this point in time, because now that we've gotten here, things change. So let's find out pretty much, you could say, you know, the death of rock and roll, or maybe the apex of what it could possibly prove that it could be, is on this album, Asia. And you'll hear it all in the opening track called Black Cow.
Precious one, I am the one who must make everything right. Talk it out. get out of here.
Isn't it weird that Brooklyn has like these strange names for like luncheonette drinks, like an egg cream and the black cow? They're both like drinks that you'd like could order in Brooklyn. Like nobody like egg cream. That's just when you had chocolate syrup to seltzer with a little bit of milk and you stir it.
It sounds like something that comes from poverty.
Well, how do you mean? Like egg cream?
Yeah, like a po' boy drink.
Yeah, right. I loved them when I was a kid. I guess I still would love them if I, you know, had the access. It's not like I don't have access to them, but I just don't think about it. But yeah, egg creams with a little chocolate syrup, and it's awesome. But a black cow is essentially your root beer float. That's what that is.
They're all gross to me.
Watch a little bit of root beer and ice cream. It's probably like pleasant for most people. But it's sort of a true story. The story that as Donald Fagen puts it, who is apparently responsible for the lyrics. He says, a lot of time when a relationship ends or there's some sort of a crisis in a relationship, one particular incident will stand out in your mind as you remember it. In this case, we thought that particular scene of this woman downing a black cow in a small luncheonette, the place where the feces hit the fan, so to speak, is what stood out in the narrator's mind. It was probably in Brooklyn, I would imagine. And there you go. So that's that. So that's Black Cow. And right there, I mean, there's not a single wasted note on that song. It's like, it's about, like, everything is as close to perfection. And this is why some people have a problem with it, I think, because everybody like to have, well, maybe you want to feel something that's a little bit more edgy or something. So when something is this perfect, it's almost weird. But you just can't get a step away from it with the album Asia. And the title track in particular, which is the next song that we're about to discuss, Asia, is actually a song that's written in three parts. It was three different songs at one point in time. Going in one particular instance, one of the three parts goes all the way back to before the band Steely Dan even existed. It goes back to when Becker and Fagen were in college and they were like auditioning to get into somebody else's band. And they had written something called Standing by the Seawall. And they had this, you know, this rhythm and this melody in their pocket that they never used. And here it is now after Steely Dan finally forming in the like early 70s. And now it's the late 70s. And they're saying, maybe we can use this for something. And then they came up with this idea of Asia as something exotic and different and like a travelogue almost. And they decided to put together these different parts of together. They also realized that, which is not surprising at all, that they needed to bring in the most talented musicians on the planet if they could, you know, manage to do so. They did get Steve Gadd on drums. They already had Denny Diaz in their band from their very first album, so that wasn't a problem. But they also wanted to bring in Wayne Shorter, the saxophonist, who had played, of course, with Miles Davis and in Weather Report, and lots of, you know, of solo act, of course, as well. But when he was asked about it, if he would be interested, his answer was no. absolutely no. I'm sure that he figured that, well, they're a pop band. I don't do pop. I'm a jazz artist. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to go down to that level. But the thing is, he had a friend who was also friends with Becker and Fagan. And that person intervened and said, maybe you ought to try it. And he eventually decided to do it. And so that is why Wayne Shorter is the saxophonist on Asia. And also why Asia is, I believe, the longest song that Steely Dan ever wrote, with the three parts being put together. And certainly one of the most complex, with drum solos and saxophone solos. It's an immense piece of work. I'm sure you've heard it many times. Perhaps this introduction would make you want to listen to it in a slightly different way. I can't say that for sure. But regardless, here's the title track, Asia.
Don't care.
That's one of those drum parts. As a drummer, it's one of those drum parts that you just want to work on for like years because it's so genuinely interesting the way that Steve Gadd goes about what he does on that. And then there's the rest of the song. It's a pretty remarkable piece of work. And the song that follows it is completely different. It's rather staid in terms of its arrangement. It's almost as long, but it's straightforward, and it covers a lot of topics lyrically. I mean, it heavy topics. It discusses depression and suicidal thoughts and alcoholism, and the difficulty of life as a musician. Perhaps that is what's bringing it all on, and all of the way that all of this can weigh on you. It's worth listening to the words. I can say that much. It's a pretty heavy song. You can determine it for yourself what you think it's about. It's called Deacon Blues.
It's my shame, there where I used to stand. It seems like only yesterday I gazed through the glass at ramblers, wild gamblers, that's all in the past. You call me a fool, you say it's a crazy. Once for real, I already bought the dream. So useless to ask me why. Throw a kiss and say goodbye. I'll make it this time. I'm ready to cross that fine line.
Learn to work the saxophone. What I feel.
Which brings us to the end of side one. Let me remind you that you're listening to American Net Radio on 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. And what we're doing today, if you don't already know, is playing our way through the Steely Dan album, Asia. Sort of their masterpiece work. Although a lot of people would say that you could say that about just about any of their albums because they're such perfectionists. But on this one, more than ever, more than any of the others, it's just kind of almost insane how perfectly aligned this album is and how the production is just so spotless. The only song on the album that was not recorded in California, Los Angeles, is the song Peg. They came back to New York and they recorded that song actually on the East Coast. So you'd expect maybe they would have a slightly different sound, but it's still produced by Gary Katz, and it's still Becker and Fagan. So if I didn't read that, I don't think I would have been able to tell the difference. I just know that that happens to be true. So first song to open up side B is this song entitled simply Peg.
Your favorite part.
Winnipeg, one of the hit singles from the album, along with, I think, Josie was the other. The girl names were the hits. And they managed to like release Deacon Blues as a single, which was rather interesting as well. Now, the next song, I misspoke earlier when I mentioned that they had recorded a song based on Homer's Iliad. Dopey me. I should not know the difference between the Iliad and the Odyssey. When I was going to school, I have to admit that I think I was supposed to be reading the Odyssey, and I think I read the Cliff Notes instead. I cheated, so I really don't remember all that much about it. And I have reason to regret it now. So if you've been watching the movie by Christopher Nolan, which is out recently, it's a bit controversial, but I know that there's a lot of love-hate going on about it. I definitely would like to see it, although Heidi finds it almost impossible to get me into a movie theater. It's my, again, you know, something that I just don't do, but kind of wish that I would now and then. I would like to see that movie. But if you did see Christopher Nolan's version of Homer's Odyssey, you might find some interesting things about the lyrics in this song, because the general idea is based upon that exact story. Of course, it's, you know, we're talking about this really massively long story, and they just take a small bit of it and it just managed to fit it into a couple of lines, a couple of verses. But nevertheless, I think you'll pick it up if you listen. It's, the song is called Home at Last. There it is. Home at last. Homer's Odyssey. In an incredibly boiled down form. You know, there's two songs left to play. And if I talk too much, we're not going to get them in. So I'm just going to say goodbye now. I hope you enjoyed the album. Thank you for listening. And tell you that the next two songs, first up is I Got the News, which is probably the least well-known song on the album, maybe the only one that you don't know if you don't already own the album. And that follows up with the other girl name song, Josie, which was also a hit single. And we'll leave you with that. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with something completely different next week, of course. See you then. Bye-bye. Take it in your hand, all the sirens and the bells.
is brought to you by AmericanHitNetwork.com.
In 1958, this magazine